Just to reorient ourselves, we are in session number 5 out of 6 on our topic of Edim Zomimim, of witnesses that have been demonstrated to later have been lying, maybe the best way to define it. We noticed a few oddities about this category of Edim Zomimim. And what we talked about last session was specifically about the problem that you might run into if you are legislating around an Eid Zomim, which is that the Torah says that you need to do to the Eid Zomim exactly as that person was attempting to do to their potential victim. Okay, so if the Eid Zomim was testifying about losing $200, then the Eid Zomim, as a penalty, himself has to pay $200. Okay, works out very well with money. It actually works out very well with death as well. I tried to kill you, now you kill me. Nefesh hacha nefesh, that actually works out fine. All lives are equal in value. But what happens if what I testified about was that your mother was a divorcee and your father was a Kohen, and that's going to turn you into halal, right? That kind of lineage testimony, which could be very impactful on a person's life, doesn't make sense to then say that the Eid Zomim, like that his personal history, right, his genetic code is going to change. You can't actually do that. It doesn't work, right? In the Gemara, like entertained briefly, maybe there's a way that it could work. And then we said, no, it doesn't work. Okay. And because it doesn't work, we need to have a different kind of penalty that we apply to the Eid Zomim. And so the Eid Zomim gets 40 lashes. And what I was very excited about last week, and maybe you didn't understand why it was so exciting, was that the general default punishment when somebody violates a lo ta'aseh, when you violate a negative commandment, and we don't know what else to do, the default is that you get 40 lashes. Okay? It's never 40, it's 39, more or less, depending on, you know, how much your body is able to handle. But getting lashes is actually a very standard penalty. Okay, so there's something very interesting about how our Gemara last week went through a lot of effort to say that these lashes are not the same lashes that you get as a standard penalty. Okay, it doesn't say, well, how do you know that you get lashes? Well, you violated a commandment, so you get lashes, right? That would have been the most simple and straightforward way to account for the 40 lashes. And instead, the Gemara used this very intricate drasha of they vindicate the righteous who was previously not righteous, and then they, if he gets lashes, and then he gets lashes, to figure out that it's precisely in the case of Eid Zomim that you get 40 lashes. Okay, that's what we did last week. And I said it was significant and I said it was interesting, but I don't know how much you bought, okay, that claim that it was significant and that it was interesting. So I can't make something interesting to you. But this week I could help clarify why it's so significant. Okay, and that's what we're going to be doing this week. And we're starting with a particular case where it's a monetary case, okay? And the question is, right, the underlying question that the Mishnah is asking is, whenever I am an Eid Zomim, whenever I have testified falsely, I have always implicitly violated lo ta'aneh b're'acha et shakar. I have implicitly violated the prohibition against testifying falsely, okay? So what the Mishnah is going to be talking about, and what Rabbi Meir, who we'll see, is going to be suggesting is, maybe every time somebody is an Eid Zomim, every time somebody testifies falsely, two things happen to them. They are punished, kasher zamam lasod, right? Whatever they intended to do gets done to them. And they get flogged and they get lashes for violating lo ta'aneh. Okay, that is going to be one possibility that we are going to shut down. Okay, the Mishnah says, if they say, that is, if the Edim Zomimim say, Mi'idim anu bi'ish ploni, shechayav v'chaveiro ma'atayim zuz. We testify that so-and-so owes his friend 200 zuz, and they turned out to be lying, right? Nimtzu zomimim. They are flogged and ordered to make restitution because the count which brings upon them the flogging, Hashem HaMevi'an Lidei Makod, right, is not the same as the shame HaMevi'an Lidei Tashumin, is not the same as the count that brings upon them the necessity to make restitution. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Okay, Rabbi Meir's opinion was actually very logical. He says there's a prohibition in Shemot that says don't testify falsely. And then there's a whole world in Dvarim that talks about Edim Zomimim. And he says, okay, so for the pasuk in Shemot, for Lo Ta'aneh B'Re'acha Eid Shaker, you're going to get lashes. You violated one of the Ten Commandments. Okay, you're going to get lashes for that. And if we're talking about Edim Zomimim, okay, so then you also have to pay this extra consequence of you also owe the guy 200 zuz, okay, because that was the content of what you lied about. So that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir essentially says you are going to be punished twice because there's two counts here. There's a count of being an Eid Shaker, and there's a count of being an Eid Zomim. Those are actually separatable, okay? Even though it was one act of testimony, we can sort of extricate the two psukim and say you're going to get lashes for testifying falsely, and you're going to have to pay 200 zuz because that is what you were trying to force your friend to pay. Okay, that's Rabbi Meir, very logical. And the Chachamim say, no. Kol ha-mishalem eino lokeh. The Chachamim say, or the majority opinion, the rabbis say, this was only one violation, and therefore it only gets one punishment, and anyone who pays does not get flogged, okay, does not receive lashes. This is a general statement. Kol ha-mishalem eino lokeh, anybody who pays doesn't get lashes, is true about anywhere in the Torah, anywhere where there would be payment, you don't get lashes. And also, the assumption always is, and thus far it has not been disproven, that whenever you would be getting lashes and/or payment, you always pay. Okay? Because I, as the victim, I much rather get the money, right, than have the person who testified falsely flashed, like that makes me happy for a second. Okay, but money makes me happy for 200 zuz. Okay, so whenever, so the Chachamim say you only get one punishment for each wrongdoing. Okay, even if there might be more than one pasuk involved, more than one infraction involved, but it was one act. Okay, the Chachamim say it was one act. And if you're paying, you're not going to get lashes. And I'm telling you that whenever lashes and payment are on the table, you are always going to get paid. Okay? But the next Mishnah is going to ask implicitly, right, a very important question. The rabbis are like formulating their idea as if you pay, you don't get lashes. Okay? There's two ways to understand that. One is the way that I already gave you, which is one act gets one punishment. So even if there were two sins involved in the single act, you only get one punishment. But a more narrow way to read that would be if there is payment involved, there isn't also lashes involved. And if you're reading it very narrowly and very literally, that still opens the possibility that if the two punishments were not money and lashes, but the two punishments were lashes and lashes, then maybe even the Chachamim would agree with Rabbi Meir and say, okay, kol ha-mishalem eino lokeh, but that doesn't mean kol ha-lokeh eino lokeh, right? I'm going to say that one more time. It's a little bit complicated. Rabbi Meir is very clear. He says, even though this was only one act, there were two infractions involved. There's two psukim involved. You both have to pay the money and get the lashes because the lashes come from Lo Ta'aneh B'Re'acha Eid Shaker, and the money comes from Kasher Zamam La'asot. It's a different pasuk. It's a different world. You have to pay both. Okay? But the rabbis say, no. If you pay, you aren't flogged. Okay? If you pay, you aren't flogged. can mean one of two things. Either you always only get one punishment if there was one act, and in the case of where there's money and flogging, I'm going to make you pay. Or it could be much more narrow. If the two punishments, one of them is financial and one of them is corporal, I can't have you do both. That doesn't preclude the possibility of maybe in some other circumstance, okay, where the two consequences aren't money and lashes, then maybe the Chachamim would say, okay, in this case, you could double up on a punishment. And that's what the next Mishnah is going to raise and then shoot down. Okay, but what if the case was Mi'idim anu b'ish poni shehu chayav malkot arba'im? The testimony that they gave was about another person being liable for 40 lashes. Okay, my testimony was that I saw Bob eat treif. Okay, and he's supposed to get lashes for that. My testimony essentially was I want Bob to get 40 lashes. If I'm then found out to be an eid zomim, v'nim te'u zomimim, lokin shmonim. Okay, Rabbi Meir is very consistent and he says, in this case, you're going to get, let's do the math, 40 plus 40 equals 80. So 40 and 40 is 80, okay? So Rabbi Meir says, great, you're going to get 80 because you get one set of lashes for, and here he gives you the psukim, lo ta'anebere echa et shaker, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. And there's another pasuk, vasizam lo kasher zamam, you have to do to the eid zomim as he planned to do. So Rabbi Meir is consistent, and he says, if the testimony was money, you pay the money for kasher zamam, and then you get the lashes for lo ta'aneh. And if the testimony happened to be about lashes, no problem. You'll get twice the number of lashes. Problem solved. And the Chachamim say, Ein lokin ela arba'im. You only get 40 lashes. Okay, the Chachamim are being in some way consistent, right? Because they are saying, you only get one punishment. You only get the 40 lashes, okay? But it's a little bit unclear which 40 lashes you're getting, right? Are you getting the 40 lashes for kasher zamam la'asot? Or are you getting the 40 lashes for lo ta'anebere'acha et shaker? Okay, I'm going to say that one more time. It's Rabbi Meir is very clear. I have two different psukim. In each of those psukim, I have a punishment of 40. You're going to get 80. So why don't I need to ask the question, where do these 40 and 40 come from? I know each of these 40s comes from one of these psukim. But when the Chachamim come and they just say, you only get 40, right? So that's a good question, right? Do I only get 40 because 40 is the maximum a human body can take? Do I only get 40 because I'm only doing lo ta'anebere acha et shaker? Or am I only doing 40 because I'm trying to do vasitem lo kasher zamam lasot? Okay, the Chachamim say you only get 40, but they don't say how those 40 are generated. Okay, so on the one hand, our question from the first Mishnah is answered. The Chachamim do not agree with Rabbi Meir in a case where it's 40 and 40. Okay, they don't have you do 80. They still maintain that you're only going to get one punishment, but they aren't really being specific. They aren't really being clear about which punishment you are getting. Okay. If you like go into the Gemara, which we will do, okay, the Gemara essentially is going to explain that they are getting the 44 Vasitem lo kasher zamam lasot. And then the Gemara kind of needs to account for, it needs to explain what happened to the 40 that I would have gotten for lo ta'anebere'acha et shaker, right? Essentially, if I'm only choosing one punishment, and the punishment that I'm choosing is always ka'asher zamam la'asot, that makes a lot of logical sense. Okay, but I have to have some kind of articulation, some reason for why I'm choosing kasher zamam lasot And I'm basically ignoring lo ta nebereacha et shaker. I don't ask you to have any punishment for testifying falsely. Okay. And in the first example where the rabbi said, kole meshalem eino loke, you do not pay and get lashes, that's like a more universal principle. And they can rely on that without being very explicit about their reasoning. But when they say you only get 40, okay, then we really need to know, why are you getting this 40 and not the other 40? Where did the other 40 go? Okay, why don't you, right? We still don't have a good reasoning for the Chachamim. We have a good reasoning for Rabbi Meir. There's two separate infractions, one act. Okay, so Rabbi Meir says, I'm looking at the two separate infractions. And the Chachamim are saying, I'm looking at this one act. But they don't articulate, right, which infraction is being punished. And even when I know which infraction is being punished, okay, I don't understand why they've chosen one over the other. I want to just put it even like more strongly. Lo ta'anebereach ha'it shakar, one of the Ten Commandments. You're telling me you're going to pick a pasuk from Dvarim over one of the Ten Commandments? That seems like a lot. Okay, I'm pausing now for questions. Gil, it looks like you've got something to ask.
I don't understand the logic in the beginning, why Rabbi Meir would think that you don't get punished twice for the same thing in the Talmud. If my own studies, you never get punished for the same twice for the same thing. Why does Rabbi Meir say you do?
Okay, good. So Gil is pointing out that, like, I'll give you another example for another area of the Talmud so that everybody understands what your question is. If I shecht someone else's animal on Shabbat, okay? I just go into their pen and I shecht their animal on Shabbat. I've done two things. I've stolen the animal. They used to have an alive animal and now they have a dead animal. It's worthless, right? I've caused them financial harm and I violated Shabbat with one slip of the knife. Okay. And then essentially the core halacha is I don't have to pay for the theft because the violation of Shabbat is much more serious. Okay. And the rabbis basically say, kim le b'derabamine, we're going to establish him in the infraction that is more weighty. And you are going to have to pay. Sorry, you're not going to have to pay the person because you're going to have to pay the penalty for violating Shabbat. Okay? And essentially, it's a one act, one punishment system. Even if in your one act, you were able to like pile it up, right? I had a ham sandwich on Yom Kippur, right? I was able to do both at once. You're only going to be punished in general for one. So Gil doesn't understand in the I have an amazing question way, not in the I don't understand sense, right? Gil says, where does Rabbi Meir even come from? We always say if there's one infraction, if there's one act, there's one punishment, even if there's more than one infraction embedded in it. So I think that Rabbi Meir would say that, first of all, Rabbi Meir precedes some of these later assumptions, okay? He lives before the Aramaic of Kim Le B'Derabamine, and he might even think in every scenario, okay? He's not quoted in other contexts, but if you were to ask him in other contexts, he would say, of course you have to pay the person back. Just because you violated Shabbat doesn't mean you didn't steal from that person. You'd have to pay them back. Okay, so one option is Rabbi Meir disagrees and he holds this principle throughout the Torah. That is possible. Rabbi Meir is a Tana. He has that authority. We could never. Rabbi Meir, no problem. Okay, that's possibility number one. Possibility number two is that there's something special about Eid Zomim, and we're actually going to see a little bit of this pop up in the Gemara, in that if I were teaching you the laws of false testimony, I would say in the same paragraph, don't testify falsely, and if you testify falsely, here is the penalty. But for Eid Zomim, it's split. There's one place where you have a penalty, sorry, right? Kasher Zamam Lasot is a penalty. and then one place where there is a prohibition with no penalty, right? So instead of having prohibition followed by penalty, which is how normal people would do it, okay, the Torah has prohibition in Shmot, penalty in Dvarim. In Dvarim, there's no prohibition, and in Shmot, there's no penalty, okay? And so a very rabbinic thinker, okay, like Rabbi Meir would say, that can't be a coincidence, okay? And there are places where the rabbis will say, because it's split up, it's deliberately trying to tell you, hey, this is two, okay? If it didn't have that special feature in the Torah, then Rabbi Meir might comply with the Chachamim's general approach, which, as Gil said, is much more representative of one act, one punishment, even if there's more than one infraction involved. It's a very good question. Okay, we're going to go back into the Gemara. So the Gemara essentially has the same biases that Gil had, where they said the Chachamim make more sense than Rabbi Meir. Where's Rabbi Meir getting it? Okay. So Baruch Shekivanta, you should be very proud of yourself that you figured out where the Gemara was going to go. It says, Bishlama l'Rabbanan. This Mishnah and its rulings make a lot of sense according to the rabbis. Because we have a pasuk, Kidei Rishato, okay, and the context here is lashes, okay, that you are going to get lashes, Kidei Rishato, according to his wickedness. Mishum Risha Achat, the Torah says that you are obligating him, meaning finding him liable and punishing him for one risha, one count, okay, but not for two. If this seems like, where is this coming from, right? The whole pasuk is that you're going to strike him kedei rishato, according to his wickedness. And if you didn't know what the law was, you would think according to his wickedness meant the worse the infraction, the more lashes, right? If I told you I'm going to lash you according to your wickedness, that is would be what you would think. However, the law is that, as I mentioned earlier, kind of as a side point, the default number of lashes is 40. That's what the Torah says. And then the rabbi said, the maximum number of lashes is 39, okay? And then the rabbis said, if somebody is weak and frail and their body cannot handle 39 lashes, you give them fewer lashes, okay? Because the sentence is lashes. The sentence is not death. So because we know that the reason why you get fewer lashes is because of your body's constitution and not because of how bad your infraction was, so then Kedei Rishato, according to his wickedness, must be there to teach me something else. And then we say, aha, isn't it interesting that it says according to his wickedness, singular, when theoretically, right, this could apply to multiple infractions. So we say, okay, this comes to teach us that you only get lashes for one act. You only get punished per act. Okay, just like Gil said, kedei rishato, one risha, one wickedness. You got to choose which one is worse, and that's the one you'll punish him for. Elo Rabbi Meir, by time of, where does Rabbi Meir come from? What is his reason? Okay, and Ula essentially answers a version of what I said. Okay, I think that what I said is more correct within the world of the Mishnah. But of course, Ula is more correct than me. He knows more than I do, okay? And Ula is saying a version of what I said, which is there is something special about this particular case of Edim Zomimim, okay? And I know this because there's another case, okay, where we actually have an exception to the rule of Ein Adam Lo Ka'u Mishalim, that you don't pay and get lashes. Okay, so Ula says there's another case that's actually very similar to this. He doesn't point out that it's similar, but it's actually very similar. And it's the case of Moti Shemra, the case of slander. Okay, essentially the Moti Shemra is he marries a woman. He claims that she was not a virgin. Okay, now We now know that hymens are very elastic and you could lose your hymen before, and also you could break or stretch the hymen and not have blood. Okay, but back in the day, there was an assumption that the first time a woman has sex, she's going to bleed. And so if a husband sees that his wife doesn't bleed, okay, he can claim that she was not a virgin and essentially say, I want my money back, right? I have this defective woman. Sorry to use such horrible language about human beings, but that is, well, that is a scenario that we are imagining, okay? So the scene is the husband says, she's not a virgin. And then verse 15, the father of the young woman and her mother shall then submit the evidence of the young woman's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. Then we have the parents coming in to save the day. They saved the sheep, okay? And they can prove that the daughter actually did bleed and the daughter actually was a virgin, okay? So if they are found to be correct, okay, then we're in verse 19. They shall fine him 100 shekels of silver, okay? And in that case, the previous pasuk says, the elders of that town shall take the man and punish him. And the rabbis almost always understand v'yisru, that language, to be flogging. Okay, so the way that the rabbis understand the law of Motzi Shemra, Motzi Shemra is a slanderer. He claimed this woman wasn't a virgin, but her parents proved that she was. He has to, pasuk yud chet, v'yisru oto, he has to be submitted to lashes, and pasuk yud tet, v'anshu oto, and they punish him with 100 shekels of silver. Okay, so Ula says, scroll up, Ula says, this is just like Motzi Shemra. He's going to say it's in terms of the legal, but I'm also going to tell you just in terms of the form of it, right? Here it is that someone said something untrue about someone else and they were proven to be lying, okay? And just out in Motzi Shemra, Loke'u Mishalem, the one who slanders is lashed and pays, okay? Afkal Loke'u Mishalem, and so we're going to say similarly in all cases, a person can get lashes and pay, okay? So Ula is saying that Rabbi Meir thinks this is true about every case, that you could always get lashes and pay, but I think you could also even make it more limited and say, well, Motzi Shemra is so similar in kind to Edim Zomimi. If that is a case where there's an exception and the person gets lashes, so too, right? Even though this person is going to pay, they're also going to get lashes in the case of Eid Zomim. That's Ula. Okay? And then the Gemara says, but wait a minute. But they aren't exactly the same because the fine, the money that you pay to the parents of the woman who was slandered against, okay? It's considered to be a knas. It's considered to be a fine. It's not money that's owed in the sense that I stole money and now I owe it back. It's a fine. It's a penalty to prevent people from saying things that aren't true, okay? So how could you apply that to Edim Zomamim? Edim Zomamim maybe is considered to be mamon. Maybe it's considered to be like money that he actually owes him. And then we come back and we say, no, he holds like Rabbi Akiva, who says the conspiring witnesses are also a fine. That is a piece that you don't need to know, okay? A little bit of a side piece, but that circles up the first version of Ula. In the first version of Ula, Rabbi Meir believes that a person can both get lashes and pay because we have the biblical case of Motzi Shemra, right, of the slanderer, where the person both suffers the lashes, v'yisruoto, and pays, v'anshuoto. And even though in that case, it's considered to be a knas, a penalty, so to here, it's also considered to be a penalty. So these two cases work together, and Rabbi Meir has proved himself. Okay, but then we say, there are those who teach the statement of Ula somewhere else. Okay, maybe Ula actually is coming from a different direction. V'lo totiru mimenu ad boker. V'hanotar mimenu ad boker. Dot, dot, dot. And the dot, dot, dot is ba'eshi saref. Okay, this is the law for the Korban Pesach. You do not save the Korban Pesach for the morning. You do not put your leftovers in the fridge. Okay, you got to finish your portion. And whatever is not finished, okay, and if it leaves over into the morning, that has to be burned. You cannot eat the meat the next day. Okay, but here, right, we have two statements. The first is don't leave it in the morning. And the second is if it is left in the morning, you need to burn it. Okay, you could have had the second sentence without the first. Right, because that implies that you weren't allowed to leave it in the morning to the morning. If it's left over, you have to burn it and you can't eat it. Okay. Bahakatuv litein ase achar lo tase. The pasuk, when it explicitly decided to give you a positive commandment after a negative commandment, to say that one is not lashed. Okay, so we said that the default punishment whenever you violate a prohibition is lashes. But if the Torah explicitly outlines a different consequence, then you do the different consequence. Okay, the best example of this is theft. The penalty for theft is I have to pay back what I stole plus double. Okay, I have to pay two times the amount. If I do that, I do not get lashes, even though I violated a prohibition. Lo tignov, right? I violated a prohibition when I stole. Okay, so also with the laws of the Korban Pesach, Rabbi Yehuda says, aha, you are not allowed to leave it off in the morning. Okay, if I only had the first half of the pasuk, which said don't leave any of it over until morning, I would have gotten lashes if I had done it. But since the pasuk tells me what I'm supposed to do, that is, I'm supposed to burn the leftover meat, okay, then it's ase achar lo tase, where essentially the Torah tells you what to do, and therefore you don't do the default like punishment, which would have been lashes. And Rabbi Akiva says, oh, no. This is not because of that, but rather it is because it is a negative commandment that has no action. And any negative commandment that has no action, one is not lashed for it. Okay? Great. Now we're going to go back. We're going to go back in our minds to the Mishnah and going to go back to the Chachamim. In the first conversation that the Gemara had, the rationale of the Chachamim was you only get one punishment for one action. Okay? Ein adam lokeu mishalem. That was what the Chachamim said. They said, kidei risha achat. There's only one risha here. There's only one thing that you are going to be called to task for. And therefore, you only get 40 lashes, or therefore you only pay. Okay? That was how we understood the Chachamim. But remember, that explanation didn't really make a ton of sense or didn't fully explain for us why, if the rabbis are going to choose only one infraction, which one they would choose. It doesn't explain that they would choose kasher zamam lasot instead of choosing lo ta'aneh b're'acha et shaker. Okay, we still had that hanging question. And so when the Gemara then reteaches Ula, okay, when the Gemara comes in and tries to bring in Ula's thinking from another direction, it doesn't say that this is the reason that it's doing it. But the reason that it's doing it is because it wants to introduce to you a new concept. And the new concept is lav she'ein bo ma'asa, that this is a prohibition, but there's no action. That essentially, because the testimony, right, the false testimony was verbal in nature, I didn't actually do anything. I was just talking, okay? If it is that kind of infraction, then you don't get lashes for it, okay? And so if we have this understanding, then the Chachamim, then essentially, right, what we are saying is we don't ever give lashes for Lo Ta'aneh on its own. Never, never, never. Because Lo Ta'aneh, do not bear false witness, is not the kind of prohibition that a person could get lashes for, because the prohibition is oral. The prohibition is not something that was done with your hands. It was not something that was done via an action. Okay? And then Ula comes back and he says, we learn from Motzi Shemra. And just like in Motzi Shemra, you have both, right? There's a negative commandment. You get the lashes and you pay. Also here, you got the lashes and you have to pay. Okay. This was a very, very complicated little dance that just happened. It's actually a structure that happens in the Gemara a lot. And people don't always realize what's happening. So you guys are going to understand this better than most people who have been studying Gemara their whole lives. Okay? You can go feel free and brag about that next time you're in Kiddush. It will frequently happen that, frequently might be overstating it, it happens enough, okay, that the Gemara will teach something one way and then teach it again another way. Okay? And whenever it does that, it has a reason for it. Okay? And this time, the thing that we taught first, the first way was Ula. And then the second time, we also taught Ula. Ula's statement was, Edim Zomimim is like Motzi Shemra. The Edim have to get lashes even though they pay. And the Motzi Shemra gets lashes even though he pays. So that's the same. And that tells me that I don't have to necessarily buy into the concept of Ein Adam Loka'u Mishalem, that a person can't both pay and get lashes, because right there in the Torah, I have an example of someone who they paid and they got lashes. Vistruoto v'anshuoto. So Ula's statement is either Chachamim, what you're saying doesn't make any sense. That's not a principle that needs to be applied everywhere. Or it's a more narrow, in these specific kinds of mitzvahs, okay, I'm actually going to give you lashes and make you pay. That's the statement of Ula. The statement of Ula doesn't change, even though we've taught it twice. Okay, in the first time that we taught it, essentially, it was coming to illuminate Rabbi Meir. It taught me something about Rabbi Meir, and it gave Rabbi Meir some support where he wasn't just saying something that seemed, like Gil was pointing out, to be totally against the fiber of rabbinic tradition, where we generally only give one punishment per crime. Where is he coming from? Oh, don't worry, I have a support for him. So that's the first time we taught Ula. The first time we taught Ula, it was really about Rabbi Meir. But the second time we taught Ula, we introduced Ula in a different way. And the reason why we taught Ula a second time was so that we could introduce him this different way. And through the second introduction, where I had this braita about burning the meat after Pesach, in that world, I learned about two new concepts. I learned about a lav that's next to an aseh, which tells me that if I have something that I'm supposed to do, pay back the money, burn the meat, okay, then I don't suffer the penalty of lashes. If I steal something, the consequences, I pay it back. If I leave my meat over, the consequences, I burn it. And because I know what the specific consequence is, I don't get the default consequence of lashes. That is the first concept that the Braita taught us. But the second concept that the Braita taught us is what we are excited about for Chachamim, which is Also, there's an idea that a law, a prohibition, she'ein bo ma'aseh, where I haven't really done anything concrete and physical, that kind of law is not powerful enough to trigger lashes. And now that I have this braita, without saying so explicitly, the Gemara has answered for you why, when the Chachamim see that there is Vasitem lo kasher zamam laso, you got to give to the Edom Zomamim like they were trying to give, okay? And a general prohibition of lo tana bereachai chaker, don't testify falsely. This is how I know, A, that they're giving the 40 lashes from kasher zamam laso, from the Edim Zomamim specific verse, and I know why they didn't choose the other verse, why they knocked out the verse from the Ten Commandments, okay? Because even once you say, I'm only going to listen to one of these verses, how do I choose which one of these verses I'm going to listen to? Which is the set of 40 lashes that the Eid Zomim is going to absorb? Now I have an understanding that lo ta'ane b're'acha et shaker is very flimsy because it's just oral. And the rabbis don't think of it as being a fully, fully concrete act. So if I have to choose one set of lashes, I'm going to choose the set of lashes that corresponds to the more concrete information, and that is kasher zamam laso. Okay, this is the most, like, this is so fundamental to learning Gemara. And I'm so happy that we're having an opportunity to at least try to understand this. My colleague, Yedida Koren, Dr. Yedida Koren, Rabbi Dr. Yedida Koren now, actually, she keeps on getting more titles. She calls this wheelbarrowing, that the Gemara has an explicit conversation that it's having. And in the meantime, it's smuggling in something else, right? Because of the joke where they let the person bring in the wheelbarrow, the empty wheelbarrows, and then at some point they see that the wheelbarrow is empty and they ask him, like, what are you smuggling? It's empty. And he says, I'm smuggling wheelbarrows, right? You don't have to get that joke. That's fine. But essentially what is happening is the Gemara is having an explicit conversation about one thing. Ula, Rabbi Meir, and then through its conversation, it's actually answering a totally different question. The Gemara asks the question of what's the reasoning of Rabbi Meir, and the Gemara answered the question of what's the reasoning of the Chachamim as well. It's extremely subtle, and you know, we're having enough trouble figuring out what the Gemara is doing explicitly. The fact that it's doing more implicit dancing can be a little frustrating. But it's also just like incredibly impressive and incredibly beautiful, right? That the Gemara has these strategies for bringing in new pieces of information, bringing in new concepts, without saying the way that I would, no, I'm going to teach you a new concept. Right? It just brings it to you through the like art of the conversation. Okay. That was a lot, a lot, a lot.
Hi, I have a couple questions and a quick comment, if that's okay.
Great.
Yeah. So first of all, the virginity thing is interesting because I have a master's in public health and I'm a little bit of a weirdo about this, but there's actually no medical concept of virginity. Like there's no, so it's interesting how like the Bible, how the Talmud rather, like defines a concept and how they conceive of a concept when there's no like, there's like, you know, that it's interesting. I just found that really interesting how like there's no medical like basis. And then they're like, let's like, I always found it fascinating how the rabbis, when they talk about like the woman body, they're like always coming up with these things. And it's like, why don't you ask a woman anyway? Like ask one woman. Then another question I have is, you know, like, what if there's like the choice between the lashes and the payment, and you go with the payment, but the person like doesn't have the finances to pay the fine? Like, what happens then?
Great. So we actually talked about that last week a little bit, which is essentially there the rule is the same as it would be in any other case. If I stole from you and I don't have the money to pay you back, then I would become your eved ivri. I would become an indentured servant and I would work off my debt.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I forgot that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And just in terms of what you said, you know, first, yes, right. There's no medical definition of virginity. There certainly was a very strong cultural definition of virginity.
Yeah.
And there was a certain assumption, right, about the way a virgin body would behave, which, as I said before we went into the psukim, does not map onto medical reality and has never. But as you said, they didn't know that. But in terms of, like, just ask one woman, like, I don't think the women knew that either. I think that, like, when you get a certain message, a certain assumption about the way the body works, and your body doesn't work that way, you don't think the medical establishment is wrong. You think, oh, there's something wrong with my body. It's so weird that I didn't bleed.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I need to ask, like, a more basic question because the Hebrew is still very slippery for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not always sure that I'm following. It's a negative commandment, do not bear false witness. So the lashes are not for violating the negative commandment, but they are for the part about punishing according to what you planned to do to someone else. Am I getting that correct?
You are getting that correct. I'm going to tighten it up a little bit for everyone. Your question proves that you understand, but also I'm going to just make it, like, a little bit clearer.
Please.
As I said, right, what we have in Shmod is a prohibition with no consequence. What we have in Devarim is a consequence with no prohibition. Now, whenever I have a consequence, there's an implied prohibition, right? Like, if I tell you, if there is, you know, if you leave your toy on the floor, I'm going to put it in the garbage. What I mean is, don't you dare leave your toy on the floor, right? The consequence implies the prohibition. So when we say, well, we're going to be listening to the verses where there's the consequence, it's perfectly coherent to do that and say, oh, that's where we're going to be locating the sense that I've done something wrong. Okay, even though there hasn't been an explicit articulation in those verses of don't bear false testimony. Okay, and then what we said about lo tana bereacha et shaker, similarly, right, that is a case where there is no articulated consequence. But since we know that every prohibition has a default consequence, right, I don't need to always spell out the consequence in order for you to know that absent other information, that's the consequence you're going to get. Okay, so they are separated, and there is a way to look at them as being two totally separate things, which is essentially the way that Rabbi Meir looks at it. I've got one consequence without a prohibition. I've got one prohibition without a consequence. But in both of those, there's essentially embedded the other half. So Rabbi Meir is like, I have two distinct prohibitions here. One, an articulated prohibition. The other, an articulated consequence. They're each independent on their own, and they're each going to have their own consequence. And the Chachamim is like, but there's just one narrative here. Don't testify falsely, and if you testify falsely, here's the consequence. So why are you looking at those as two when really it's one act? You violated one prohibition. I don't care that it's in two psukim. Okay, hope that makes it a marginally clearer. Good. Other thoughts or questions?
If there's no one else waiting, I have two more questions.
Okay, sure. You know, most people will find that someone else's question will help sharpen their own thinking, so go for it.
Thank you. I have this, like, there's something troubling about this reasoning to me in the sense that I'm trying to square it with my understanding that in other places we grant so much power to words. Like other places where the verbal insult is so important and taken so seriously. So it seems a little bit like maybe this ruling is contradicting that feeling that I get elsewhere. Does that make sense?
That's a very informed feeling. Okay. So don't put it down by just calling it a feeling. Essentially what Deborah is saying is, what are you talking about by saying that words aren't meaningful? When you take an oath, that's a word. When you curse God, that's a word. When you shame someone in public, often that's words, although not exclusively. Motzi shemra, those are just words, right? And we're treating those words very seriously because words have consequences. You know how you know that words have consequences? Verbal testimony can get somebody killed, right? So why are you calling it a lav she'ein bo maaseh? Maybe they're not physical actions, but just because it's not physical doesn't mean it's not powerful. Okay, and we see all over Jewish law that speech acts have serious consequences. Okay, so Deborah's question is very good. Here is what I will say. First thing I will say is historically true, but a little bit of a cop-out. Historically, the notion of lav she'ein bo maaseh is it's passive. Okay, so in the case of Tuvi, that makes a little bit too much.
Translate that piece of Hebrew, please.
Yes, okay, I'm about to. The lav she'ein bo maaseh is the prohibition, right? The violation that doesn't have an act. Okay, the original example that we saw was I left over my meat. That's not an action. That's a passiveness, okay? So the original understanding actually does make a lot of sense. Why should you get lashes for something you didn't do actively? Time went on, okay? And that's what made the mourning come. You didn't bring the mourning. You didn't finish your meat. That was bad. But the leaving it over was passive. And so it was bad, but it's not going to give you lashes. Bad. Okay. The other example of lav she'ein bo maaseh is, you know, if you're a man and you're not allowed to cut certain parts of your hair and beard, what if somebody else cuts your hair and beard? That's also considered to be a lav she'ein bo maaseh. You are passive in the violation of don't destroy your, this, you know, these parts of your head. So that's the true answer, but it's also a little bit of a cop-out because eventually through Talmudic discourse, like they do start talking about lav she'ein bo maaseh as oral versus physical. And the answer to this question, and I don't think you're going to like it, is it does create some problems, but it also solves other problems. So like in other cases, like the case of cursing God or testifying about someone who curses God, like there are areas where saying it's just verbal, so don't worry about it, is actually very helpful and very useful. And there are problems where, and then there are areas where you're like, but that doesn't make any sense because it's testimony and testimony is actual words, just words, but has a lot of impact. So all I could say is your question is good. On the Tannaitic level, for sure, there was no idea of, it's just words, don't worry about it. That is a foreign concept to the Tannaim. It is a later development. It's one of these overly sophisticated developments, which whenever something's overly sophisticated, you're going to find the area where it actually doesn't make any sense. And you're going to find the area where you're like, huh, this is the key that unlocks everything. Okay, so this is kind of like a double-edged concept, and we're not in a perfect place with it. But I'm glad that you asked that question.